It's Reality Check with Craig Price.
I'm an idiot.
Four minutes in and I'm already wrong.
I'm like a monkey. Hello, look at me. Craig, shut up.
Hey, I need you guys to do these things.
I'm Craig Price, professional bastard. Nice to meet you.
Welcome to Reality Check with Craig Price. This week, the fabulous Lois Kramer is here to talk about the speaking business. More importantly, she's here to talk about the business of speaking. I mean, people think this being a speaker is a glamorous and exciting, and when, which it certainly can be, but 99% of the time, it's really about just trying to find the opportunity to speak to marketing to potential clients. It's trying to find out where the meetings are and who's in charge of the meetings, and it's a lot of work. It's work. It's a speaking business. It's not about writing a book and waiting for the phone to ring. That doesn't happen. And many speakers have great things to say, but they don't know how to position themselves in front of the right people so they can say these great things that they've got. But Lois does. It's her business to figure out how to get speakers in the right position. That's what she does. So if you're a new speaker, or you're thinking about being a speaker, or you wanted to know about, you know, how do speakers get the business that they get, I think this is the episode for you. I think you'll really take away a lot from today, and I certainly hope so. That's my hope. So it's time for me to shut up and give you the great Lois Kramer. Well, I've got the attitude that a lot of speakers forget is that we are just as important as the food, the table settings, as the centerpieces, as all of it. We're just another piece, and we're not the reason they're having the meeting.
That's exactly correct. I always like to position myself as the easiest person you'll ever work with.
Right. I do, too. Yeah. I actually, in my four meeting planners, you know, no divas allowed is what I is right in red, and you can see
it.
And then I talk about, you know, my job isn't to do this and this. It's to make your event as easy and as successful as possible.
Yeah.
And the best way of me doing that is getting out of your way and doing a great job.
I think that's a great way to put it.
Well, I wish more people did that.
And, I know.
And I'm here with Lois Kramer. Lois is a speaker specialist. And so normally we have a lot of great speakers on, but rarely do we focus on the speaking profession. So for this one great episode, we're going to talk about just about speakers and what they need to do and what they're doing right, doing wrong. In the speaking profession, I was just able to see your great presentation
here
in Houston.
Thank you.
And what is the number one thing you think that you see speakers doing wrong when it comes to promoting themselves or booking business or trying to market and all that entails? There's usually one big goofball thing. So what do you think is the key?
Well, I think one of the biggest mistakes that speakers make at any level, Craig, whether they're new to the business, whether they've been in it 5 years, 50 years, they don't focus on a target market. They don't have a plan of attack. And they are not good at thinking about leveraging success that they've had. And for example, they will go and do a speech, get a great reception, get a super testimonial, go back to the office and say, okay, I wonder who I should chase now. When not considering the group they just spoke to, what they look like, what they do, how they operate. And if you were successful with them, you need to look for like groups.
So to me, that seems almost counterintuitive because
it does.
First thing I do as soon as I'm done, and I speak to a broad base. I mean, I talk to all kinds of weird associations that are really fun for me because I like to do that. My niche is my topic. My niche is what I talk about, not necessarily who I talk about.
Gotcha.
Causes some good things and some bad things. I certainly understand the drawbacks of the road I'm going. But the first thing I do is, who did I just talk to, and who else is like that? I mean, if I talk to a project management group, the next thing I do when I get back is, what other project management associations are there? What other project manager thing can I do? Why do you think there's an aversion to that? Is it just they don't know? Or
one would think that they would do exactly what you do, but I'm telling you, they don't. And I think it comes down to not really having a plan for how you're going to go forward with your business. And not looking at what markets, where do I have experience? Where do I have effectiveness? where can I market where I'm not going to be fighting over my fee? I'm not going to meet a lot of fee rejection. And going after those people where you know your message is well received, it's meaningful, and they value it, and you're not in a fight about money. And then just leveraging the hell out of it. You know, for example, when you're talking to a corporation, every time you talk to a corporation, an exit question should be, are you a member of a trade group or an association? Because you would be a perfect fit then for that trade group or association.
It's just a room full of perfect fits.
And that's like the super showcase in front of that trade group.
It's the voice for speakers.
That's exactly right. And it can be frustrating marketing to associations, but the payoff is tremendous.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really find marketing to associations as difficult as others because I kind of have a system. Because once you know, that's the great thing about an association is they're pretty much a system. Like if you go to one association,
they do. You're right.
Corporations, you're right. Or colleges are even worse. Colleges, you can't figure out who's in charge,
yeah,
because they all have 9 million titles.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the student group. Maybe it's this group. So the key thing, how do you zero in on that particular industry, which may be quite obvious for some,
mm-hmm,
but how, if you do have a, what they always have, I think they will talk to everybody. That's the one thing about speakers is my message is for everybody. No, it's not,
yeah,
for me.
Yeah, I hear that a lot.
So how can they zero in if they have a quote unquote broad message to get to that industry or a market?
Well, I, you know, I said in the program today that lots of times people approach me and say, you know, I speak on customer service. And my question is always, where do you think your message is effective? Where has it been well received? And
everywhere.
They say everywhere. And then I say, go call everyone and see if they're interested. You know, that's one plan, the alphabet plan, which is not very gratifying, satisfying, and you're not going to make much money doing it that way. So as far as looking to niche, I say, look at where you have some experience. Maybe you've worked in private industry in some capacity. Maybe you were a banker in a previous life. Maybe you worked at a credit union. Maybe you worked in a manufacturing situation. Maybe you worked for an insurance company. And you can kind of leverage that experience into creating a mentality with a prospect that I'm one of you. I come from where you come from. So I know the challenges and the concerns you have. And one of the reasons that I started a business like mine is so I can help you with those challenges and those concerns.
Yeah, because I see a lot of, that's a trend that I've seen, is especially with younger speakers, which I'm glad there are more younger speakers, but they come out of school with a communications degree.
Yes.
And immediately want to start speaking, but they haven't even gotten,
yes,
a job yet, so they don't have a market. Doesn't mean they don't have a good message. It just means that their starting point is obscured.
Well, you know, that's a great point, because I get calls, as you can imagine, lots of times from people who have found me any number of ways. And they say, you know, I speak on work-life balance. And yeah, one of the questions I had was, what kind of experience do you have that qualifies you for your expertise? And she said, well, I have been a psychologist for 30 years working with blah, 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 blah. So she obviously,
oh, absolutely,
totally qualified. But you would be amazed at the number of people who go, well, I've read a lot about it, and, you know, it's, I find it interesting. People tell me that I'm a good communicator.
Oh, that's the one that drives me crazy. The people at church think I speak very,
yes,
well. It's,
yeah,
like, that's, yeah, it's like when I used to do comedy, people thought they were funny with their friends, they're going to be funny in front of a group. It's just like if you think you can speak at church when you're comfortable with people you know.
Yes.
It's not a totally different story when you walk in,
yes,
front of,
yes,
like you were telling a story about, you walk in and it's 99.9% men.
Yes.
There's one woman who's kind of manly, and yourself. So, I mean, if you can do it at that point, that separates the,
yes,
the professional from the amateur. So, you know, how can you start preparing yourself for that?
A great question. You know, I am a big believer in Toastmasters. I call Toastmasters the off-Broadway of speaking. And if you join a Toastmaster group, you're going to find a lot of professional speakers there. And there are smart people who are honing their craft, who are practicing stories, trying out new material. And one of the best things about Toastmasters is you get this well-considered feedback on what you're talking about. And it is an absolute marvelous training ground for speakers. When anybody calls me and says, I'm really interested in thinking about doing this professionally, I say, first step, you've got to decide where your expertise is and what qualifies you, how you're going to be able to convince people.
Absolutely.
Then you need to get yourself to Toastmasters and develop material, try it out. Then you need to look for a National Speakers Association chapter and join the Speaker Academy.
It's called ProTrack in some places, the Speaker Academy.
Well, actually, the Speaker Academy on the national level, the chapter level, they have ProTrack.
Right.
In Houston, you've got a wonderful ProTrack. This is an absolute sin when people don't take advantage of these experiences, ProTracks, and chapters.
The great thing is this goes out all over the country. So
yes.
I know that there's, I believe St. Louis, where you're from, has a good academy.
We used to.
Oh, we used to. Again, my information may be old, but it was accurate at one point. That's my information was accurate at one point. And I know there's other chapters. I know Milwaukee chapter does a great job because our good friend and former guest Eliz Green
does a great job.
Well, she does good at everything. It's disgusting.
Chicago has an absolutely great one going, and it's a wonderful experience where speakers who are early in their career really get mentored by true professionals who are out there doing this for a living and have learned great lessons on the road. And it's just a wonderful opportunity. And I think that really you have to be, if you want to do this for a living, you have to be willing to do the things you need to do to get really good at this. Because the competition is very, very stiff.
And it's I always relate it to acting because it's my background, but there's always an influx. There's always, it's in stereotypical, there's always that new face coming off the bus tomorrow.
That's right.
Now, it may not be a new face as in 22-year-old starlet, but it could be a 62-year-old CEO who's just retired and still wants to do something, and now all of a sudden his expertise is going to bulldoze over your business because he speaks on your topic, but he's got 30 years of experience and maybe a little notoriety.
That's right. That's right.
So I've always, when it's new speakers, I think they have a lot more opportunity nowadays to advance.
I agree with you.
Especially with social media.
Yep.
But for the established speakers, I consider myself one of those, but I still have difficulty in a lot of the marketing and sales process. You're talking about the most important piece of equipment in your office is the telephone.
Yes.
To me, it is the foot massage because it relaxes me so I can get things through the day. But I mean, I know a lot of speakers are, especially if they don't come from a sales background, are adverse to the phone.
Well, and a lot of speakers do come from a sales background.
Oh, sales and marketing. If you are a sales or a marketer,
yeah,
whether you have talent or not,
that's right,
you can do fairly well in this business.
But I'll tell you, people, I hear all the time, I'm not comfortable talking about myself. And, I really get tired of hearing that, quite frankly. And my patience is wearing thinner the older I get.
We're going to have a difficult lunch. I'm just going to warn you right now.
I'm getting indigestion already.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult.
But I, one of the techniques that I suggest is to think about yourself as a product, and you're selling your intellectual property. You're not selling yourself per se, your personality. You're selling your intellectual property. But realizing that what differentiates you in the market from someone who speaks maybe on the same topic is your own stories, your experience. That's uniqueness. Too many people think about uniqueness in speaking as he is the left-handed, right leg amputeed, balding. That's, that's not unique.
Well, the guy there, I don't know who he is. I don't want you to say his name, but there is somebody out there who I see every year with a propeller on his head, and it drives me crazy. My wife doesn't come to the big NSA meetings anymore because it's like going to the circus freak show because they think that these little tiny gimmicks are what sells them, and what sells end of person is you.
Well, it depreciates you, quite frankly.
I believe so.
Yeah. And, your uniqueness comes from what you bring to the topic, your stories, your personal experience, and how you relate to an audience and how the audience relates to you. That's your expertise. What an audience wants is your take on your subject matter.
I see this. The fear I hear all the time from certain speakers, not the good ones, never hear this. the new speakers or the amateur, they're always worried about people stealing their material. Same with comics.
That's exactly right.
And it's like, well, first off, if you deliver it your way, it's not stealing. Unless they are doing an imitation of you, they're not going to deliver it smooth. I mean, I don't have to worry about it because nobody wants to talk about my topic and nobody delivers it my way. So I don't really have to worry about that. But then that was my point I wanted to lead to. Some differentiation can be too drastic. Yeah, that purple cow syndrome that Seth Godin talks about.
Yeah.
Well, let's be honest. Nobody wants to buy milk from a purple cow.
Yeah.
They want to go to the fair and see a purple cow. look at that freak show over there. But they want to know if I gave you a glass of milk and said, oh, that came from a purple cow, you'd spit it out at me and get mad. So differentiation is good, but you don't want to differentiate yourself too much because then you have to kind of spend too much time explaining how you are like everybody else, but you're not quite like everybody else.
You have to have a sophisticated approach to
crap.
It. You know.
Yeah.
Sorry, Craig.
Yeah, I know. I'm screwed.
That's the bad news.
I am screwed.
But I do. I think that one of the things that kind of is the thorn in the paw, in this organization is defining uniqueness. People just feel like they've got to jump through hoops for this. And really, your uniqueness is what you bring to the subject matter.
Which is why I like that there's 15 books on uniqueness.
That's right.
And they're all called The Power of Something. So, but I mean, absolutely. What I do on a daily basis is try to be me as much as possible. Now, that may irritate a lot of people, but, for my business and just for my well-being as
a
human being.
But that's all you can be.
Yeah, but I feel that when you first start out, you try to be, you emulate people you like. And it really does take practice to be yourself at all times.
It does. You know, it's too hard. It's too hard of a road to hoe to be seeing people and at every turn trying to say, well, that works for them. I'm going to make it work for me and try it. It's, it's too much of an uphill battle. But I think as you get experience, that's one way to get experience by seeing people.
Well, you may not even have the same skill set.
Yes.
I mean, I can't go up there and do in the middle of it, cry in my presentation because, A, nothing in there is going to be depressing enough for me to cry. And because if I could cry, I would still be even acting.
Now, the audience cries, but that's a whole other experience with you, I think.
They usually shake a little bit and they nervously look for the exits. But at the end of it, they have a good time. But, I mean, you see my point is that I can't be you.
I think that
I can read your book, but I can't be you.
I think that's it, and I think that people have too much angst over this uniqueness thing.
Yeah,
and being is your uniqueness. It's your take on things. You know, when I talk to speakers about selling, or when I talk to corporations or associations and do a sales training. I can work with any number of disparate groups who have different products or services that they offer. And it's my take on how to talk to people. And it's my style of selling that I'm sharing with them, what works for me.
It's your attitude that you bring in.
Yes.
I mean, the reason why I'm bringing this up and I want to talk about it so much is because I think that is one of the key selling points of every single speaker out there. But I also think it's the one that people ignore the most.
Well, I think you're absolutely right.
I love it when they say that.
This time you are, though.
Yeah.
This time I really mean it.
But I feel that there's a lot of things out there that it's just you can be. As much as you love Toastmasters, as far as I'm concerned, if you've never had any speaking experience, it's perfect for a banker or a new business person who has to give presents. For me, I see them sometimes they take a little of your personality away because I think I broke someone's arm with the factor one time. And quite frankly, aren't that big a deal if you are energetic, you have a personality.
Yes. Yeah.
And because I see people who all the time, but you don't even notice it until you go back to try to count them. So I think Toastmasters is really good for new speakers. And people who like that style, I just feel like I wish
they
would.
Sometimes it can be very staged. I think that what you have to do is find what you're comfortable with the way Toastmasters works.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And realizing that it's your personality and your intellect that you're bringing. And so it's never going to be the exact same.
Well, mostly personality for me, but that's... So how can we translate into some sales? Because the reason I want you on is because you have such great sales knowledge for speakers. And in general, the biggest mistake is they don't get on the phone. That's I can see. I can go back to where we started and missed out. But how valuable is the phone in general? Because I keep thinking that A, nobody wants to bother. You can't get anybody on the phone.
Yeah.
And nobody ever returns a call. And this is not just me saying it. It's I know this is one of the biggest ones. So how can we take our great personality and our great programs and start using that phone and start making some calls? Because that's my biggest problem.
Well, it's everyone's biggest problem. And here's the challenge I have, though. You cannot do an effective job qualifying somebody by email or by social media or by any other way. You need to talk. You need to ask questions to ascertain whether you would ever be a fit for this group. And the only way to do that is to have a phone call. I only believe in using the phone with a prospect or a client when there is business to transact. And at first blush, to qualify, you do need to call, and you have to be persistent to get to talk to them.
And I think that's where the hesitation for a lot of speakers
yes.
is. It's not necessarily the first call. It's that, I didn't get them. Now I'm going to have to call them back.
That's right.
And I hate people calling me unless they're clients or potential clients. But I mean, I don't like salespeople calling me for stuff.
I understand.
So I feel like it's hypocritical of me to do the same thing.
Craig, I think that this is what I would say about that. We're not selling siding to people while they're eating dinner. We are selling speaking services to professional organizations who use speakers. So we are not in a boiler room somewhere trying to sell, siding and roofing. And I think that a lot of speakers, that's what they have the picture in their mind when I'm telling them you need to proactively get on the phone and search out some prospects. But I always say, remember what we're selling. We're selling speeches to people who hire speakers, typically, or who need our information. If they tell us they aren't interested, we're out of there. We're not going to be pushy. We're not going to be insistent that we know what's best for them. We're going to offer up what we can do for them, and we're going to make our case. And they're either going to use us or pass, and we're going to either work for them or move on. I do think that you have to become more effective at voicemail. And I tell my clients, look, if you want to be effective at voicemail, start leaving yourself some voicemails.
Practice, yeah.
Because if you're leaving a lot of voicemails and none of them are getting returned, guess what? It means you suck at voicemail. That's the clue.
Halfway through, I know I suck at voicemail because I'll be like, can I press one to start over? No? Well, please call me back, because it's one of those things that, you think being a speaker, I can just wing this.
That's right.
I'm just going to be able
That's
to,
right.
I'm a speaker. I speak to people. This is going to be easy until beep, and then you're screwed.
Well, and I talked today in our meeting about, I believe in the value of a positioning statement that kind of defines you by the concept and outcome of what you can do for a client. And I think you can leave an effective, uninterrupted commercial for what you can do for someone on voicemail. People will say to me, I hate voicemail. And my answer is, I love it. First of all, I love it because I don't have any other choice. I have to. Secondly, I have an opportunity to leave an uninterrupted commercial for what I do and why they should get back to me and talk to me. Now, how effective I am at doing that, I'm going to find out pretty quickly by starting and doing it. But people who adopt a great positioning statement, always have something to say, always say the same thing no matter who they're talking to, and it's either going to float or it's going to sink.
So what am I looking for in a positioning statement per se? I mean, because that sounds like a good thing. You always want to be in a good position, but I mean, this isn't like the Kama Sutra of sales. I don't know all the positions that I don't know which position to get into, so, you talked about it today, but there's a way you can position that, make that statement. What is a positioning statement, and what is the best way to craft it?
Well, a great positioning statement it should be, I differentiate between that and an elevator.
Oh, yeah, the elevator speech itself.
Because I think they're too long. I believe that I should be able to say in 5 to 7 seconds what I do.
Yeah.
I think any professional communications person who cannot describe what they can do for you in 7 seconds needs to go back to school.
Well, this 30-second elevator speech, that's three floors. They could easily get off before you're finished.
Absolutely right, and they have mentally.
Oh, yeah.
Whether they have not physically.
I've been trapped in an elevator with an elevator speech guy, so I certainly understand that.
But I think what you have to do is talk about what you can do for people. You know, when I'm approaching speakers, I do not go over a laundry list of specific things I can do for a speaker in their business. I say I work with speakers who want to book more business, which is one of the things they want to do, get more bookings, make more money, and avoid making costly mistakes in their speaking practice. And then I shut up. And that is either going to resonate or it's not. And if it doesn't, then I know that that's not a good prospect for me. If it does, they're going to say, well, how do you do that? And then I'm going to get into the type of consulting packages I have. And they'll typically with me, they want to know, who have I ever heard of anybody you've worked for? And what have you done for them? And what can you do for me? But basically, that's what I'll say. I work with speakers who want to book more business, make more money, and avoid costly mistakes. And in my sales training, when approaching a company, I would say I work with organizations. That's kind of inclusive
language.
Well,
that's everything. It's more than two people.
That's right.
An organization.
That's right. I work with organizations that want to fast forward their selling skills so they can be more successful at what they do. Stop.
And I think that is the hardest part. I think for speakers.
I agree.
Because we want to speak.
Well, we want to give the list of outcomes. And I'm saying if you speak in conceptually, then it becomes a conversation. This should not be a monologue, this phone call. It should be a conversation. Remembering that I'm kind of known for my 10 questions to book more business, qualifying questions, because anybody in sales knows it's the person who's asking the question who's in control of the conversation. So I want you to be prepared with what information you need to know to be able to understand whether this person is ever going to be a fit for you and to really have a meaningful conversation that does not waste their time or your time.
And I always feel, and I know other speakers are like this, they just, silence is deadly for them. So they, it's not, and I mean, not necessarily just want to list off their stuff. They just feel like,
they need to jump
in. Better say something because I want to make sure until they interrupt me, I better say something so they know how wonderful I am or how important I am or how good my stuff is.
I think that people need to become comfortable with silence. I think of silence as kind of a shared intimacy with two people. I think you need to become comfortable. And I think you need to, in a sales call, for example, be able to say, I'm hearing the wheels turning. What are you thinking about what I said? You know, asking an open-ended question that will elicit some thoughts. Lots of times that's when you'll hear the sales objections or you'll hear their questions about you or what are your fees? I don't know whether I could afford to work with you.
I actually prefer them to ask that like almost immediately.
Yeah.
I mean, really, right. I really do because that's, you
it's
want to talk
qualifier.
About qualifier. Oh, that's the best qualifier. It's the only qualifier,
you know,
isn't it?
If you do this for a living and want to pay your bills, it had better damn well be a qualifier. And that's why I tell speakers, you need to bring it up. Be the one to bring it up. Don't pussyfoot around it and think, you know, I'm not comfortable talking about money. Forget that.
Well,
you're not
going to
make it.
That's
right.
I mean, it's one of those things where there's two things that happen. If they ask me, if I call them up and I'm talking to them and the first question, you know, I do the qualifying statement, and the first question they have is, well, what's your fee? Two things run in my head. A, they can't afford me, because if it's a big, important thing on their mind, it's usually because of a tight budget. Not necessarily true, but it's that's one of the two.
This is going to be a
done deal as far as they're going to give me a price. They thought my qualifying statement was good enough to go, well, let's see if this is even worth pursuing.
Mm-hmm.
Where the other one is more of a qualifying, can we afford them? I don't care if it's good or not, can I afford them?
Interesting. You know what my take is on that? Speakers at one time or another, because of all of the information that's out there on the web, somebody can have looked at your website and really know a lot about you, what you've done, your experience. And so you'll answer the phone and they'll say, hey, I'm Joe Smith. I run the XYZ company. What is your fee to come out and speak? That would be the first question they ask, like you said. I always think the best way to answer that is to say, hey, I love talking about my fee, but first I want to make sure that I'm a perfect fit for what you need.
Yeah.
Because when you make fit the most important thing, a whole different dynamic takes place between you and the prospect. They realize that you're being the panacea for their problems.
That would be a solution for people who didn't go to college.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm a high school graduate. It's not like I didn't know that word.
Yeah, but you're smart.
But they really feel like, you know, like you're part of the conversation.
Yeah, and for me, because of my, I want to make sure that I'm a fit, because I talk on such a weird subject that people get misconceptions. And the last thing I want to do on a just a ethical and a emotional level is walk in there and do something that they didn't expect.
Absolutely right, Craig.
But I know a lot of speakers, just they will adapt.
You know what? Listen.
And that's,
you know,
being nice.
Isn't that frightening? that scares the hell out of me, even you're saying it. The thing that veteran speakers know is that in order to do a great job for a client, you have to do your homework before you arrive. I think one of the most valuable pieces of marketing material that speakers can have is a great pre-programmed questionnaire. And anybody who wants a copy of mine can email me, lois@bookmorebusiness.com. I'm happy to share. I've got a great one, if I do say so myself.
I have a good one, I think. I'd like to compare notes, so I'll definitely do that.
Good. And I also like to interview two or three people in an organization when I do a sales program. Because during that program, I will say, you know, when I talk to Joe Smith, he said that you're having problems meeting quota the last month of every quarter.
And then Joe Smith is not at the meeting because he's been fired for talking out of turn.
No, I'm just kidding. What it says is, first of all, Joe's thrilled to be mentioned. And it says to that group that I know what I'm talking about, that I know what they're dealing with, that I did care enough to do my due diligence before I showed up. And this is not some canned presentation that I give to whatever they do, whatever their job is. And it's an easy thing to do. A pre-programmed questionnaire, a good one, shouldn't take long to fill out. It should be pretty easy. And I don't spend more than 5 minutes talking to people. And when I call, I say, I'd like to speak to two or three of your people, of your board members, and I only need 5 minutes of their time. And really, I'm looking to get a quote from them to include.
And I make sure they know that this is not the SATs. They don't have to fill out every single thing.
Yes.
Fill out what you get your comfortable feeling.
That's
out.
That's right. That's right.
Because otherwise they'll get bogged down in the minutiae, and guess what? They give up on you because they don't want to deal with it.
Well, yeah, you don't want to make it homework.
Right.
But you want to, you know, I think it gives them an idea of how seriously you take the job, and that this isn't the same program you gave, you know, to
realtors down the street.
That's exactly right.
Now, we're running out of time, but one of the last things I want to talk to you about is something I really believe in, and I know that you do as well, and it's the power of testimonials and how important they are. I mean, I am one of the few people that I do a lot of email marketing. I use it as a, like, hey, is this permission for me to call you? Because if they email back and say, hey, I'd like to talk to you, that's great. But the first thing I do is put two short but relevant testimonials in my email, so they can say, as they start reading, within less than three sentences, they've got someone in their industry saying good things about me.
Yes.
Why don't people use testimonials as much as they should?
You know, it's a great question, because I consider testimonials the economic capital of your speaking practice.
It's the only thing that can prove it.
Exactly right. That's exactly
even
right.
Even your video can't prove you can do what you can do. It just says that maybe they didn't stage that.
It means I've had some platform time in my life.
Yeah.
And a great testimonial gives you great credibility that you can't buy. And I think that we need to be really diligent on trying to get one every time we speak. Every time we speak, is it going to happen? No. I say that in your follow-up, in your thank you call after you present, you want to say, gee, if you could put down some of the positive feedback you heard on your letterhead, it would really be helpful to me. And I would appreciate it.
Now, that's where I have the worry when I heard that.
Tell me.
Because you say letterhead, and in letterhead, I've noticed anytime I've asked for a testimonial, on the phone or in person or, you know, however I've asked for one, when it's indicated that it needs to be on letterhead or I would like it on letterhead or I'd like something official, that either slows it way down or I don't even get a testimonial. While if I go to LinkedIn, because I always LinkedIn, we all link in with everyone we ever meet.
Yes, that's true.
And
that's
I ask for a recommendation. I have literally gotten some of my best recommendations within 5 minutes of sending out a recommendation
and
to LinkedIn.
And I think that's fine.
Is it okay?
Absolutely it is.
Because this whole letterhead thing is driving me crazy. Because if I had to pull out testimonials on letterhead, I think I have two.
No, absolutely not. You know, I think that I just want you to use these testimonials. Too many people gather them and collect them, and they're collecting dust, and nobody sees them. Or you put them up on your website amidst, you know, 50 other ones and nobody's going to read them. I think, as I said, they're the economic capital of your practice. They are what should be selling you. And LinkedIn, a you know, great platform for speakers, having great recommendations. You can compile recommendations in an email, as you said you do. You can also use letters of recommendation. In other ways, too. You know, it does seem like LinkedIn would be really easy. Sometimes people have trouble deciding what to say. And I've found leading them by saying, if you can just think of some of the feedback you heard and put that down, that would be helpful. I am not into this thing that a lot of speakers say, well, I write it. And then I ask him to sign. I think that is the tackiest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And I always get a question about it. And I'm very proud of Houston that nobody said that today.
You know, you say you don't like people who talk about themselves or who don't want to talk about themselves. But in a testimonial, I don't like talking about myself. I couldn't even imagine what to say nice about me. That's why I'm asking you. But I really think that the LinkedIn testimonials, I think you really need to get those out there. And one of the other things that I would throw out there, I'm sure you know this as well, as far as testimonials, if they don't know what to say, throw in a couple from someone in their industry that's similar and say, you know, can you say something nice about whatever I did? Like if I just did a huge customized program, can you just talk about something similar about how great I
always
was customized.
Always a great idea. Always a great idea. Give them a model. You know, I worked for a similar company, and they said they appreciated my pre-work and my interviewing people beforehand. And, you know, if you felt that way, you could allude to that. I think that's perfectly acceptable. Writing and asking somebody to sign it, I think, is the tackiest thing I've ever heard. You know, and LinkedIn is, I think, makes it feel manageable to people because it's right there. It's you can literally have a few sentences and the immediacy of LinkedIn. I tell people if you are asking for a testimonial, you get one chance to follow up. You ask for it because we're not going to be a stalker about a testimonial. I mean, if we get our check, you know, that's what we should be getting.
That's testimonial.
That's right. But so I say if you ask in a thank you call for a testimonial, you get one shot at reminding them. But you're not going to do it in person. You're going to do an after hours call wanting to get their voicemail, or you're going to send them an email and say something like, when we spoke a couple of weeks ago, you kindly offered to write a testimonial. If it's in the mail, thanks in advance. If you haven't done it, just know I'd still love to receive it if you have time. Then that's it. If you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't. Drop it.
Well, Lois, we've just begun to scratch the surface, and I wish I could keep you here all day, but I really appreciate all your time. Where can we find you?
You can find me at bookmorebusiness.com on the web. I write a blog just for speakers and welcome anybody who's interested in the speaking industry to sign up and receive my posts.
And I know firsthand that you answer almost every tweet and question.
I really do.
And no,
I
you really do. That's why I'm bringing it up. You're great.
My Twitter handle is at Lois Kramer, and I spell Kramer, Creamer, C-R-E-A-M-E-R.
And because you're the cream of the crop.
Well.
You're the creamer of the crop.
Thank you very much. But I love social media. I embrace it, as we all must. And I'm happy to talk to anybody about the business.
And of course, we're sitting here in a restaurant making me hungry. Are you ready for lunch?
I'm ready. Let's go.
That's our show for this week. I want to thank Lois for joining me in between doing a 3-hour program and lunch, which I certainly appreciate. You can catch us at realitycheckpodcast.com.
You can like us on Facebook. Every Tuesday the show comes out. You can listen right from your timeline now. You can follow us on Twitter at RealityCheckPod. And if you have any suggestions or feedback, Craig at SpeakerCraigPrice.com. See you next week.
I am screwed.